From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 12th day of September 2019. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. And Matt Bennett should join us to discuss this morning's USDA reports and the numbers released by NASS and the World Agricultural Outlook Board. And along the way, we'll also check in on the weather forecast. Mike Tenora will be here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world at willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, here are the settlement prices from the CME Group in Chicago. September corn up 6.25 today, finished at $3.54.5. December 3.67 1/4, up 7.25, and the March up 7.5 cents at $3.79 3/4. May futures $3.89, up 7.25, and July 7 cents higher at $3.96. Soybeans jumped after the USDA report this morning, dropped to the ending stocks, and of course the yield $8.83 in the September, up 29 cents. November 29 higher at $8.95.5, and January at $9.09, up 28.5. The May futures $9.32 1/4, 26 cents higher. And next year's July at $9.41 1/4, up 25. Bean oil 29 cents higher. The bean meal up $6.50 for the day. Wheat futures soft red up 8.25 at $4.85 3/4, and the hard red 3.25 higher at $3.80 even. Live cattle futures in Chicago 22.5 higher at $98.72 1/2. Feeders at $136.85, up 77.5, and lean hogs the $3 limit higher at $67.17 1/2. At 11 o'clock Central Time this morning, USDA updated the monthly crop production numbers and the WASDE figures. It now says that we will have 168.2 bushel corn yield with a 2.19 billion bushel carryout for corn and 47.9 bushel soybean yield with a 640 million bushel carryout. That's down fairly sharply from the previous numbers. We'll take a look at those in just a moment. We're now joined by Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas, to take a look at the marketplace. Hey, good afternoon to you, Dan. Thanks for being with us.
You're more than welcome, Todd.
Kind of busy at 11 o'clock today when USDA released the numbers. I don't know how surprised the trade was. Apparently some with the USDA's soybean figure, because they did end up dropping ending stocks for this year pretty sharply. Can you tell me about those numbers and the reaction of the trade?
I would say that's the thing that stood out to me when I just glanced at the supply-demand table, was the ending stocks for this coming year. And I go, how did they get there? And, of course, then I looked at the current year. I guess it's last year already. I guess September 1, we kicked over to the new year. But yeah, where they increased demand, dropped ending stocks or carry-in stocks were dropped. And then, of course, with the yield drop, production dropped. And all of a sudden, we're talking about, I think, 640 million carry-out, where, you know, a few months ago, we were worried that we're going to hit a billion bushel carry-out. So I think when you look at it from the macro area, from what we were thinking maybe back last winter, last spring, to now what is actually happening this fall, the soybean fundamentals have made a major turn. And along with that is the technicals have made a major turn. We had that major price reversal, monthly reversal to the upside during May. That ended up turning into a quarterly reversal. Then we wallowed around here during July and August, but now we've come back to life. And with today's advancement on soybeans, we're right at the top end of kind of what I would call more of a sideways basing trading range that we've kind of put in during August and September here. And I mean, it looks like we're going to bust out of that. And if we do, then we're in for, you know, a major retracement rally back toward at least the June highs that we posted earlier this year. So the technicals look real good on soybeans. I think we're going to look back at that May low being a very pretty important low. And now I think with today's price action, We're solidifying that May low as a major low. And the overall trend, I think, in soybeans is to move higher as we go through the fall and winter months, and we'll see what we'll see what spring brings. So, I think both the fundamentalists and the technical guys have to be a little friendly tonight after today's trade. China is back buying beans. We're supposed to be back talking again on a trade deal. So today was a pretty good day, I think, all around on soybeans.
Yeah, so soybeans, just a reminder, in the month of August, USDA had predicted that we'd have a 755 million bushel carryout by the time we got to the end of this marketing year or next fall. And now that's down 115 million bushels to 640 million bushels. Corn's a different story. Corn is up, 9 million bushels? And this is an interesting different story because the production on the corn is down 102 million. They drop yield, and they're at 167.2, rather at 168.2. That's down from the 169.5 they had. But they went in and really chucked through the demand side of the corn, and that offset everything in the way of the production losses for this fall that USDA is predicting. What'd you make of those numbers?
Well, you knew it was coming. It was just a matter of when they were going to do it because demand has been lagging. But I want to see what the September stocks number shows us because that should be a pretty clean number because there's harvest going on, but nothing like it would be during a normal year. So when the USDA does their survey, of course, they should have already done their survey as of September 1st, but we're not going to get the number published until the end of the month. It'll be September 30th or something like that. I'm kind of interesting to see what that says. And that'll kind of show us what feed, seed, and residual use is, whether or not that shrinks or expands or whatever. That's kind of an important number. And of course, that'll have a direct result on actual carryover. Whatever number they come up with, that'll be the ending stocks number for last year's supply and demand table. But now moving over to corn, we got a reversal to the upside today, Todd. And it's a weekly reversal.
I ask you about a monthly?
And it's on its way to be a monthly. Remember we talked last week. I told you there were some divergences occurring based upon the technical indicators, and the prices were making lower lows, but the technical indicators were not making lower lows. So that was kind of indicating that we were probably getting close to some kind of bottom. And of course, we talked on Thursday. We went down on Friday. We made a little lower low on Monday. And now we've kind of pulled out of that. Now we've had a big rally day. So, yeah, we're in the cards for a weekly reversal. We had the daily today. We got a weekly tomorrow, unless we decide to give everything back. And then we're on our way for a monthly reversal. And that would be counter-seasonal. And this also goes with soybeans. Seasonally, September is, 9 out of 10 years. Might not be quite 9. It might be 8.5 out of 10 years. But you usually go lower during the month of September. And then you usually make your lows kind of during the first 10 days or so of October. This year is definitely different because the reason you go lower in September is because harvest pressure is starting to take hold. But this year we don't have that harvest pressure. So we're going counter seasonal. And with today's advancement in soybeans, soybeans are actually in good position to close out the month of September higher also. We're still behind, but we could have a pretty nice reversal also on the soybean charts. And I have to say that if we do go counter seasonal, that'll be that will tell us probably that USDA's yield numbers are going to come down. Because as we go down the road here next week, we're going to hear a little bit more about harvest pressure. The following week, we're going to hear a little bit more. And by the time first week October comes around, we're going to hear more harvest. So it wouldn't surprise me that once the combines start rolling, that the yields that USDA published today won't hold up, and they're going to have to come down. And if we get ourselves into one of these situations where they have to keep ratcheting that yield down, then we're in an upward trending market all the way into the January final. So that's something that I would look for that would be counter-seasonal. Once you get this thing, a counter-seasonal move going, see, a counter-seasonal means you're rowing your boat upstream and you're making headway. Okay, then when the seasonals kick in on your side, that's kind of like going downstream. And so the month of October should be easier for the market to go up. If we have a counter-seasonal move higher during September, October usually is when the seasonals turn up, and that will make the market easier to go up. So we could have a nice little fall rally as we go into Thanksgiving. And then, of course, at the end of the year, we get into all kinds of tax issues and marketing issues and all this kind of stuff. So December is a real ratty month. I learned a long time ago that you do your trading, you kind of finish up your trading by the end of November and just go on vacation during December, because December doesn't make any sense. Because it's year-end position squaring, you got farmers squaring up their taxes and their movement and all that kind of stuff. So it's a real ratty type market.
Hey, so I wanted to go through one last thing, because if this is a production-driven rally and we have demand dwindling, it should be a quick rally and then set back fairly quickly as well.
Well, we may not have demand dwindling. We may kind of turn the corner on demand, and we'll see what happens with China. We'll see what happens with the
SREs
small
and
refinery exemptions.
Yeah.
Well, we may get that turned around. The small refinery exemptions, we may get that turned around. May not get everything what we want, but at least we maybe get it turned around that there's not as many exemptions. And all of a sudden, maybe we have a little better demand on ethanol than what we thought. Trump is a businessman, but he's also a politician now, since he's in and he's running for reelection. He's got to have these farm states to win the Electoral College. So I haven't given up on him yet. I think he's going to pull through for the farmers at the end of the day.
All right. Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate it. We'll talk with you again next week.
Very well, Todd.
Mm-hmm. That is Dan Zwicker. He is with Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. In today's agricultural news, we'll start in Washington, D.C., where today politicians and supporters of the USMCA, or United States-Mexico-Canada Trade Agreement, gathered in support of it and its passage. Gary Crawford has more from the United States Department of Agriculture.
Outside the U.S. Capitol Thursday, a rally of agricultural interests all asking for
the USMCA soon as possible.
Former Arkansas Senator Blanche Lincoln acting as host for the rally, which included members of Congress and others. House Ag Committee Chairman Colin Peterson told the crowd several lawmakers have told him that the U.S.-Mexico-Canada trade agreement could come up for a vote in the House in 1 or 2 months.
I know the Speaker is working hard to build support in our caucus so that we can bring this to the floor. So I think we're on track, at least at this point.
On hand at the rally, former Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack, now heading up the U.S. Dairy Export Council. He said the USMCA is a very important agreement, important
to 2.5 million farmers and their families, to the 43 million hardworking Americans whose jobs depend on the food and agriculture industry, and to the 320 million consumers who want choice, who want quality, who want safety, and who want competition for their consuming dollars.
In Washington, Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
Just a quick note that all three of the voices you heard in support of USMCA in that USDA report are Democrats. U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer, speaking of Democrats, sent the House Democrats his formal response to their main concerns this week about the new North American Free Trade Pact, or the USMCA, a key step forward in slow-moving negotiations between the White House and Capitol Hill. Democrats have been waiting several weeks for USTR's latest counteroffer on four core issues in the trade deal: labor, environment, enforcement, and prescription drugs. September is seen as a critical month for making progress on USMCA and potentially securing a vote before the end of the year. Let's stay in Washington, D.C., but switch gears just a bit. U.S. EPA has just announced that it has repealed the Waters of the United States rule that had defined pollution protections for small streams and wetlands. The rollback is the first in a two-step process to restrict the reach of the Clean Water Act. The second move is a replacement rule expected by the end of the year that would restrict the number of waterways that receive federal protection. The Trump administration called for killing WOTUS shortly after entering the White House. Today's move should reinstate the rules that had governed Clean Water Act permitting under the George W. Bush administration. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. On this Thursday afternoon, Mike Tenura is here from T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Good afternoon to you, Mike. Thanks for being with us.
Great being here, Todd.
It's warm. Can you tell me about the weather forecast and what the warm weather we have at the moment is doing? It looks like it's going to go away for a couple of days at least.
It's going to leave for a couple of days, but that's really about it. We have another upper-level high that's going to form this weekend and more so next week, and that's going to leave a very wide area much warmer than normal all the way until around next Thursday, Friday, or Saturday. So highs will mostly be in the 70s and 80s. We might even see a 90 or two next week, but the unseasonably mild pattern lasts for, again, about another week, besides a couple of days you were talking about. And then we'll start to cool off a little bit next weekend.
Anything that we should be aware of here in the United States further out?
Well, the only thing that we need to watch for regards the potential for some frost, because the chance for frost climatologically increases every day once we get beyond about September 20th. And we can see that it is going to be cooler next weekend and then into the last week of the month. But at this point, the air mass only looks marginally cool, so that would limit the overall threat for frost. And keep in mind, when we talk about frost right now, we're mainly talking the northern growing areas, so the Dakotas, Minnesota, maybe parts of Wisconsin. Everybody to the south, it'll be real difficult to see anything like that for a while. Plus, on top of that, it's been real wet over the last couple of weeks, and because of that, it tends to keep nighttime temperatures a little bit warmer because of all the wet soils. So between those two things, the chance for a frost, although a little bit low, once we get around 10 to 14 days into the future, it just doesn't look to be a serious threat. We need to get real cold, down below 28 degrees, to start worrying about it, and that's just not in the cards for a while.
South American farmers are looking into their growing season. What do you see?
Well, this is the first time in a while that we can see that there are some problems developing down there. Both Argentina and Brazil have been pretty dry for a while, but it's most notable in Brazil. If we wait out their soybean production by the coverage of dryness, we can see that 96% of soybean production, or at least expected soybean production in Brazil, was drier than normal over the last 30 days. And it's almost identical if you look at it over the last 60 days and over the last 90 days, with 95% of that crop having been drier than normal. And that would be considered agricultural drought. Now, if you're familiar with Brazil, you'll remember that the northern areas are typically pretty dry in June, July, August, and the first half of September. So seeing dryness in the northern soybean areas right now is not all that unusual. But as you head south and then into Paraguay, where this is also occurring, they do not see a distinct dry season. So it should be raining, and it's not raining, and there's a drought in place in these southern areas. Because of that, it's going to be difficult to plant early corn and early soybeans until we start to get some rain. We can see it's going to be pretty dry for another 10 to 12 days, and then we start to see some slightly better rain chances. But this is going to be something to talk about for a while, because until we start to see some big rains, we're going to have to deal with this. On top of that, Todd, if you look at the status of the current El Nino and where it's projected to move over the next 6 months, we can look back at some years and see that several of those years had droughts in southern Brazil and in Paraguay. So there's a whole bunch of things lining up here that says you need to keep an eye on what's happening in Brazil.
So you mentioned El Nino. I was going to ask if there was any weather feature that was causing the dryness now in Paraguay. I'm not certain that El Nino is at fault here, but is there something else?
Well, weather is always random within the climate, so I don't think you can pinpoint this to anything in particular at the moment. But the only reason we watch the status of the El Nino is because, at least in the case that we're in now, we've been in a pretty weak El Nino condition for a while, and we're starting to loosen out from that. And what I mean is that we're just basically having pretty close to normal ocean temperatures at the moment and as we go forward. And when you look back in the past at the years when that happened, a lot of those years show up as being problem years for Brazil's soybeans. And so that tells us that this ocean situation we have, where the Pacific Ocean is basically not going to change a whole lot over the next 6 months with water temperatures staying pretty close to normal, those are the years that sometimes lead to poorer crops. So we know that, and we also know what's happening with it being dry. And you put those two together, and you have to conclude that this is something that is not totally out of the ordinary when you have this type of ocean set up.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate that. That is Mike Tenuri. He's with T-Storm Weather out of Chicago, Illinois. Let's turn our attention now to the cash grain market. What happened there today? Matt Bennett is here. He's with AgMarket.net. Good afternoon to you, Matt. Thanks so much. What'd you make of this morning's USDA reports?
You know, I think on the initial offset, you know, I figured the market would be disappointed with the corn yield number, and of course carry out actually added just a little bit, so I didn't figure that we would see you know, a higher move on the day like we ended up with. But the bean market was awfully strong going into the report and held its gains and even built upon them afterwards with you know, a minimal adjustment lower. And I think the bigger news maybe than the bean crop getting a little smaller and carry out getting a little smaller was, you know, Chinese coming in buying beans for the first time in a while. So I think all in all, obviously, the thing for me is it was a good day. Whenever you look at the screen at the end of the day, nice to see a reversal in the corn market and potentially a double bottom.
Yeah, I had kind of forgotten about that because it wasn't a small purchase that the Chinese made today. What, six cargoes or something like that?
Yeah, you know, I saw varying reports, but the one that I trusted the most said 600,000 tons is what I was told. So, you know, I think regardless, it was a pretty large purchase. I think, you know, some of the rhetoric we've heard is that there's going to be some goodwill gestures, if you will, back and forth. And so it seems to me like tensions are easing just a little bit going into a potential negotiation. I don't think a person has to be a rocket scientist to figure out that both countries would like to see this happen. It's just a matter of getting everyone to let cooler heads prevail. And I would say cooler heads are prevailing whenever they start buying some of our products.
Are you of a mind that producers should hold steady still and wait to make sales?
Yeah, I think, you know, something we've been talking about lately is that producers, you know, don't want to get scared into making sales just because the market was in a free fall, and that mindset of it's never going to go back up, you know, it's probably a little preliminary before combines even get a chance to roll. So, you know, I do think that you could see some further revisions lower on yields moving forward, although they may not be large. You know, you really need to see this corn crop get a good finish to be able to add the weight that we'd like to see it have. You know, there's some potential for sure, but I still am very skeptical, especially with my grain elevator hat on. To me, I'm glad that I'm not in that business this year, because you have to dry too much of this crop, you know, keeping the crop first of all, and then obviously drying it. You know, there's going to be some test weight issues and some quality issues.
That is Matt Bennett. He is with AgMarket.net. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason.